Hello and welcome from a sunny San Francisco. This is Wizards of the Cast, episode 75, in a room filled with planeswalkers again. We've got Evan Wardell.
Hello.
We've got Larry Chatfield.
Howdy, boys and girls.
And we've got myself, Cole Ferriolo. We're all back in the room, boys.
I'm sorry, I did it again. I'm making loud lip smacking noises.
Well, that's what happens when we're all back on mic now and you're not listening to my creaky chair in my living room. And I apologize for listeners for last week who dealt with our audio issues. And I know this episode is going to be coming out a little late because of schedules, but thanks for hanging in. We had a great week of magic.
Just a couple hours late. We'll be fine.
It goes out.
If you listen to this when it comes out, you will have heard it about an hour after we recorded it.
Production. Hashtag production skills.
Yeah.
We've had a great week of magic, or at least I've had a pretty good week of magic. Larry, you're back in the room. It's awesome to have you here. We got a great episode ahead. The sky is falling. Wastes are here. And
I've had a good week of eating food before playing magic.
Yeah. That's right. We did soup dumplings at Versus.
Oh,
I remember
baby.
You were like, I don't have band practice tonight, turns out. And I leaned over and I just had to say two words, soup dumplings.
Oh, yeah.
And you were like, okay, I'll go.
I don't like those things.
You don't like the
they're so good.
The soup dumplings?
I don't. I love the dumpling place. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
I absolutely love dumplings. I just don't like those. You're like, you bite into it and it's like.
I don't like how when you go to that place, they tell you that you haven't ordered enough food, and it's like, what are you trying to say?
They did that to us. We ordered two.
We got like three orders of dumplings and like some appetizers, and they're like, that's not enough.
They literally were like, that's not enough food.
That's not enough for two people.
Like, I've gone here and eaten that amount of food before. Like,
you a fat white person need to eat more food.
That's what exactly is like. Oh, you logged those. You need to eat more. You need to eat more food, obviously. So we ended up ordering four orders of soup dumplings and our one string bean appetizer.
Oh, man. I love the beans.
Yeah, the beans, the garlic beans are good.
Yeah, just shove some of those string beans on top of the pile of dumpling in your stomach, and then I ate healthy.
That place is always so fucking hot, too.
Yes. Well, it's a teeny little hole in the wall, Dumpling King, across the street from Versus. And then after that, we went and drafted on Wednesday night at Versus. We had a good...
It's great.
Full pod.
Great.
It was good to see some of the regular players there. And I went, I 3-0'd the pod.
You did it.
I lost one game to Alex in the finals.
Did you cheat?
I didn't cheat. I just drafted really well. I first picked, what's the black card? Two and a black, and it exiles a creature with power 3 or less.
Complete disregard.
Complete disregard. I know. I always know it as the card with that kind of a title that is. Like kind of an F you. It's like, get out of here or something. It's called complete disregard. You don't matter.
I keep thinking that card, that name would have been much cooler, like on a rare.
Right. They could have put that on the
Awaken. Ruinous Path.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes more sense. Anyway, so I first picked that. Second picked an Eldrazi Sky Spawner, as you do. and then got past third pick.
Man, you should have passed me that Eldrazi Sky Spawner. My draft would have gone so much smoother.
Yeah. I remember you were downstream from me.
Yeah, I was right next to you.
I passed you Duststalker. So it was Duststalker or Complete Disregard. I took the Complete Disregard, which I think is the right pick, although Duststalker is a good archetype.
Oh, Duststalker,
it's the 5/3 rare. Did you pick that up?
I think I did. I first picked Windrider. I don't know.
Which is?
Guardian of Tazim.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Okay.
And then Guardian of Tazim is the 5 mana... 4/5, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I first picked him,
then
there's like nothing else in the pack you passed me, so I took Duststalker, and I was like, maybe it'll work out, and then I ended up in green, which was a...
Were you
1-2 or something like that?
Yeah.
Seems reasonable.
Although, one of the matches came down to a really close game 3, and then the last match I played, I had mulliganed a lot, and just kind of got ran over before I could really... Like, if I could get my thing going, it would get
You had, like,
nuts.
A Cura in your deck, too. I mean,
I had a Cura and a Guardian of Tazim.
Yeah.
And I was blue-white. Or, no, sorry, green-white. And I had Tajiri Warcaller and, like, Orin Reef Hydra. I had a bunch of great bombs, and, like, I could do some crazy...
I remember you just got all the Snapping Gnarlids, too.
Yeah, I got, like, 5 Snapping Gnarlids.
They just kept going around and around and around.
The deck was okay. I got a little bit unlucky at one match, and then just kind of, like... when I played Alex in round 2, he, like, had the removal spell or the counter spell he needed to counter my
right
Kiora, and then we went into top decking mode, and he got out of it better than I did.
right.
He got his Noyandar, and I got my Snapping Darlet again, or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It was not a terrible deck, but
no. It definitely it was, you know, it could do the green things. It had some power level to it.
It really did feel like there. If I got off to the double Snapping Gnarled start, it was really good. And then there was like a huge gap in like power per mana cost between Snapping Gnarled and the top end. You know,
right.
There's just like a bunch of like a. I was playing like Call of the Scions and like. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know,
the 2/4 reach. And,
you know, when they have those little curves that, like, look at your mana curve, it goes like, you know, you got some twos, and then you get a ton of threes, and then some fours, and a few fives.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is like the exact opposite, right? It's like you got a bunch of twos, and it goes down.
Yeah.
And then it goes back up for
bunch
like
of five, six.
Yeah. I mean, I could do some really gross stuff with, like, Tajuru, Warcaller, and Retreat to Emeria.
Right, you had a retreat.
That kind of shenanigans.
Yeah.
It'd be great with the Snapping Gnarlids, because you play the land, the Gnarlids all get +1/+1. You get the ally off the retreat, and then
right.
the Tajuru Warcaller gives all your dudes +2/+2. So
oh, man.
All your Snapping Gnarlids become 5/5s.
Sweet.
It's pretty sweet stuff.
Nice, that sounds great. Yeah, I saw all those Snapping Gnarlids, didn't take any of them. I third-picked Adrana's Emissary. And then black-white just, you know, was totally open, and I drafted the sickest black-white deck.
Yeah. You had a very sweet deck.
It was a deck that I've wanted to draft, tried to draft multiple times, had bad versions of, and like this was like, oh, this is when this deck is firing on all cylinders.
How many of the healers did you have?
I had 3 Clostria healers. In one game, I went Clostria healer into Clostria healer into Clostria healer. And then cast a Bloodbond Vampire and like made a 6/6 and drained him. He was like, "Here's my better Siege Rhino."
Yeah, today you're like, all of my cards were Siege Rhinos after that.
Yeah, and then you know, Cluster Healers. I had like a great top end too of I had like a super close pack two pick one. I had the 6 mana exile. Land in a creature for as an instant.
Grip of Desolation.
Grip of Desolation, thank you. And then I had Felidar Sovereign, too, in the same pack.
Felidar
Sovereign, the 4/6 lifelink for 6.
And what did you take?
I took the Sovereign, actually, and passed the... It was real close. What would you have done, Larry?
I take the Grip.
Really? Because yeah. Everybody at the pod was like, yeah, Sovereign seems good.
It's close. I think if you had some removal already, I definitely would have taken
Sovereign.
Well, see,
I mean, it doesn't seem like your deck is going to lose because of all your life
right,
game
of
triggers
of what it can all do. With. And
it
I
just,
didn't really...
It feels like you lose to, like, you know, yeah. some Guardian of Tazim whacking you for 4 a turn and you can't do anything about it.
Right. Thankfully, I wasn't punished because I then ended up getting past the Stasis Snare and ended up having like plenty of great top end
removal.
I
passed you that Stasis Snare.
Yeah. I mean, what did you take over? Because if you were white in pack 2.
Pack 2 was the pack I got into white. Like okay. Midway through pack 2, I was like, I'm getting a lot of really great white cards.
Yeah.
And, you know, I knew I was green. I wasn't sure what my second color was. I was like, maybe white's a good idea. And then I just got nothing in pack 3.
Yeah, because I ate all the white. Like, in pack 3, I got past Shepherd of Emeria. That was my top end. It was like Calostria, Nightwatch, Guard Sentinel, Ghostly Sentinel.
Looking at that picture you sent me, and I'm like, this is just gross.
Oh, there's a distinct feeling when you know that your deck is so above what your opponent is doing that you can get away with making mistakes and playing poorly, and
yeah.
It's probably not gonna, like, early in the rounds I didn't really understand the complete power level of the deck, and so I was playing like maybe far too conservatively and was throwing away some cards, and then round 3 I was throwing away some cards because I was playing stupidly aggressive because it was just, you know, I was like making mistakes and blowing. I think I blocked and then also in this same turn used 2 untapped mana to cast the tandem tactics, thinking, oh, I'm going to eat his creature, and then forgetting that landfall always gives toughness bumps as well as power bumps. So just like threw it away, but didn't matter because I was beating him in the air with Adrana's emissary and
you probably gained two life. And, like,
I gained two
stuff.
Life. I triggered a thing. Something gained death touch. It was not really that big of a, but it was just like it was a sick deck. I saved it. I think we should do a bracket and we should all play our saved decks and see who really drafted the best of BFC.
Oh man,
because this deck was pretty good. I think it would have given a. Given the red blue Eldrazi deck I drafted like week two of this format, a run for its money.
Yeah, it's funny, those Drana's emissaries almost act like 4/4s a little bit.
Yeah,
because, like, you know, the drain is a 2-point life swing,
right?
And then does 2 damage, so it's like,
oh, it's crazy. I mean, every time I ran it out
quick.
On turn three, like, you go class three hero, you play emissary, and then you, like,
I don't know how you actually lose if you go
if
healer
they don't
into,
untap, kill it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it was the same thing with you, Evan, when you went was it Serene Steward into Drana's emissary, and then
oh yeah, that was great.
I had a Serene Steward in my deck as well, and that
oh yeah,
trigger please. Oh, I had dude, I got a Bloodbond Vampire pick 5 pack 3, like, this what, deck was
it's
just
not very good at,
if
except
you're in that,
for that
in,
archetype,
in that
right?
deck, but yeah. I was just like in that deck, and I took Colossus Healers very high.
You should. They. I mean, if you want them, you have to pick them like in the first 3 slots or something.
And I was. Well, I totally was. I was picking them where whenever I saw them, I just picked it. Didn't matter when where it was.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like, if you're in that deck, it's a high pick, but.
Otherwise,
it's
just
not
terrible.
Like, right.
It's literally terrible. Otherwise, like, it might be okay in the, like, allies deck, right?
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, if you start, so, like, the amount of times you see them changes a lot depending on which pack you're in. Like, people aren't going to probably pick them in the first, like, 5 picks unless, mm-hmm. like, you know, they're kind of looking in that direction. And anyways,
I saw, and I actually do watch him, but I usually turn the volume off because I hate him. But I was watching Ari Lax, and he picked a healer,
right?
And he had.
I'm not saying it never happens.
No, but
I
I'm saying
mean, like,
I'm saying there are people who, like, will take something like that and go for that high risk, high reward.
Yeah.
And he had 5 of them in his deck.
It's pretty
oh my
sweet.
God.
I mean, it's like, he's like, if you don't have, like, a Boiling Earth, you can't beat me.
Right.
And it really was. It was
you have
just
to
like,
cast 2 Boiling Earths. Cause
he went, like, healer into healer into, like, the
whatever,
it
doesn't matter.
The death touch guy.
Yeah, right.
And
exactly.
It's also one of those cards that, like, the more of them you have, the more you want more of them, because, like, multiples just makes it just gets insane.
Yeah,
it's funny. I've drafted the black white deck before and had, like, 1 healer and then a bunch of medics in that deck, and the deck feels so different.
Yeah.
It's so much slower, it's so much more grindy, it's like it's just a lot worse. Where if you get any hand where you would go double healer, was just insane. You just cast your 2/3 and then drain them for a 4-point life swing, and it's just like it's gross.
Yeah.
It's gross.
It's sweet. And one thing about Bloodbond Vampire in that deck when you're drafting it is it's a good signal that the deck is open.
Open, yes.
Because it's uncommon, so you don't see them that very often. So you'll probably just, like, if there's one at the table, the person who's in that deck is gonna take that card because it's right. so good in mm-hmm. that deck. So I mean, like, when I drafted my insane black white deck, I got that, like, 7th pick or something. It was like,
but
oh.
But didn't you also get an early Drana's Emissary, too, as well?
Yeah, I mean, I've picks 1 and 2 were both Drana's Emissaries.
Oh,
and then I just started taking
bastard.
Blue cards.
Right.
Because those first 2 picks were just, like, there wasn't much in the
right.
in the packs. And I was like, yeah, we'll just
pick
try
a Drana's
it.
Emissary. After my experience of not first picking it, having it wheel to the 7th pick to the guy immediately to my
yeah.
left who took it and then
yeah.
cut me. I'm telling you, I've tried to draft this black-white deck a couple of times and they've all ended in semi-disasters.
It's the most popular archetype on Magic Online.
I would believe it is because I think it's one of those archetypes where...
It's so straightforward, too.
Like, it's very straightforward. Like, again, honestly, even when I was playing...
Feels like it plays itself.
Yes, that's exactly how I felt. Like, that's what I'm telling you. Like, I felt like I could make mistakes. I could make chump blocks where I really didn't need to, or I could, like, be aggressive and throw a combat trick away. And it kind of didn't really matter, because if I just untapped and played something next turn, I was going to get ahead.
the super funny thing I saw about Ari Lax, too, is he, like I said, he had, like, 5 of them, and of course, he had all the other stuff that goes with it. So there's this one thing, and he's like, he plays it on turn 2, and then the guy plays his second land, and he's, like, playing, like, white red or something like mm-hmm. that. And he's like, nope, I'm not attacking. I'm not going to attack into your Gideon's Reproach. I'm just going to play this
thing.
I'm just going
to hang out and drain you.
Yeah. And, right. And it's funny because it reminded me totally of what we were talking about last week when I had my the Awaken deck.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, you know, I have two Gideon's Reproach and I have like, you know, a Royal's Retribution. And I'm like, somebody attack me, please.
Right.
Like, but like, you know, they just sit there with the healers and they're like, nope.
I did the same thing. So in the finals, I played Alex, who had the Noyandar and like the he had the Awaken deck, and he did have like Sheer Drop and things like that.
Oh yes, yes.
And I
exactly.
found like I'm not gonna like there was a couple turns where he had, you know, one or two cards left in hand, and I was like, I just don't even feel the need to play into Gideon's Reproach or which he had shown me to or Shield Drop, and I'm just gonna sit back with my Drawn as Emissary and just drain you for one, untap, play a thing, drain you with a Colossus Healer trigger. And just kind of like incrementally go until I know I can like start swinging it in or the game gets close.
Yeah, it's funny. He later on in that game, the guy had kind of like the same number of like two cards in his hand like the whole time. And he's like, oh, I'll attack with my Calastria Nightwatch now because it's got flying and whatever. And the guy's like, you know, does something and kills it. And he's like, yep. He's like, I knew he had it.
Right.
And he's like, it's just like that. That's a really great feeling when you like play around something like that, you know?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, if you know your opponent has it, that's a definitely a great skill to use. But it's funny with the black-white deck, though, is that it also it does feel like it kind of pilots itself in that way and that you don't necessarily have to attack or necessarily interact always with your opponent to just start winning the game.
Yes.
And the way that it's based off of having like an assembling of like one or two or three creatures kind of all acting in unison, because like sometimes you'll like I would wait to attack when I play an ally, get a life point trigger off the healer, you know, get all my guys vigilance so that I can make an attack past a sheer drop like totally fine and then run, you know, it's like it the way it all works together. If your opponent doesn't have some type of wrath effect, like just eliminate your board, you can kind of just sit back and kill them.
Yeah.
And it's really, I think that's why it's probably one of the popular decks, because it's so straightforward and it's so almost kind of foolproof if it's drafted well.
Yeah. And I love that it puts whenever you're playing that deck, unless you're like if you know, if you have a good version of it, unless you're getting mana screwed or something, it almost always puts the onus on your opponent to come up with something.
Right.
To kill you, because, like, you don't have to block their creatures. Like, you can just race them, and you're always going to be winning that race because you're draining them all the time.
Draining them, you may be hitting them with a flyer.
Yeah.
Like, black-white gives you plenty of ways of having flying.
Yeah, and then if
the
they
game.
Decide they don't want to attack you, then you're like, all right, we can just sit here and I'll continue draining you every turn.
And also, the deck archetype gives you a good amount of removal, too, I felt. Or at least
in
my deck.
Or you lose.
I had a pretty decent amount of removal, so I could deal with
Yeah, and white has all
threats.
The best removal.
Right.
I mean, barring Grip of Desolation, which is in black, mm-hmm. which is the other.
Right, or Complete Disregard.
Yeah.
So I like Complete Disregard, a Sheer Drop, a Stasis Snare, and a Demon's Grasp or something like that. And it was just like, okay, great. Like, I can kill things, I can sit back here and do things, and or I can jump my guys. I also had two Blighted Steps, which ended up being really good in the
Sweet.
Deck. Because just the instant speed... like life gain to give death touch triggers or flying triggers.
Well, and you, again, you were saying you just sit there and do nothing and you just get like five or six creatures out there, right?
Right. And then and then you start getting into this racing situation where you might be racing their flyers or racing their one big ground and pounder, and then you just like
gain 12
life, go back up to 22
trigger everything.
Right. Trigger flying and a death touch and this thing like that. A Bloodborne Vampire goes up again.
It's sweet. Everyone should force it all the time.
right. Well, I think it's off. It's funny because I think you can start in that deck picking white-black removal until you see something like Bloodbond Vampire, Drawn as Emissary, or Colostria Healers, and then just try and dive in.
Yeah, if you see a couple of those cards late, you can be pretty. Can rest assured, it's probably
because even a healer is not gonna. A healer will never wheel, right?
I don't think anymore.
Sometimes, I mean, if...
Really? I don't think I've ever seen it.
If no one's in the deck.
It just seems like it would get snatched up for that deck, or at least even, like, the
Or somebody prospects on it.
But, I mean, it goes in the ally deck, too, right?
Kind of. But,
I mean, it does it does something different, but
there's
I mean,
so many different things you can do in all the colors. Like, there can totally be a scenario where, you know, someone... a guy, you know, the two people to your left are drafting. One of them's drafting like blue white awaken flyers or whatever, and the other one's drafting like red black devoid.
Right.
And so they're taking all the black and white removal, and the only only cards that would be in the black white deck that you see coming through would be the class Drew Healer or the
right.
So like. You know, those cards can trickle through without the colors seeming very open, which makes it a little weird to draft sometimes. And maybe it's like if you've already started taking a couple of the removal spells in that color, or like I did, just take a bunch of Drawn's Emissaries. And see, it's one of those things where, like, you just need to get one of those, like, late in the pack signals where it's like, oh, this must be
open.
This must be open.
Right. I think I saw... Saw one kind of later in pack two.
Yeah. I mean, looking, it's tough to spot though.
Looking up the draft stream from me, it was the guy to my right was Izzet, blue red, and then the guy to his right, Ryan, was red white, and so black white was completely nicely open, but my white was getting picked a little bit. And I remember you being so pissed because you. At the end of the draft, we're like, did you do this to me?
Wait, were you passing to me or was I
passing?
Passing
you were
passing
you.
To me.
Yeah, and you were like, I was trying to go red, green, landfall, but none of the red showed up.
Yeah, so yeah. It was clear that green was open, but... Yeah.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Well, green is always open in this format because...
Well, I got like a 6th, 5th pick Orin Reef Hydra. I'm like, I have to.
Right.
That's funny you say that because...
That means green is so open that there has to be something. And I already have this crazy bomb, so let's just do it.
I was watching the Grand Prix, and the announcers were talking about it. And it was day two, and one of the guys opens the Orm Reef Hydra. And the announcer's like, nope. And the guy, like, goes and takes, like, you know, anything else, right? So one of the guys at the table... ends up getting 3 Orin Reef Hydras.
What?
Oh, my God.
It's like the only green table. And he went 2-1, but he, like, in the finals round 3 of that that pod, he just totally shows why that the green is just not that particular, like, the fatty green stuff. The guy's like, oh, I'll cast an Orin Reef Hydra, and then I'll put a forest into play, and they make it, like, a 7-7 or whatever. And the guy's, like, untaps, and he's like, I spent 5 and clutch a currents and attack you for this. And then the guy, like, puts it out again. And then he's like, you know, just goes around it. It's like,
right.
He's like, so
I mean,
bad.
Clutch a currents is a total, like, clutch a currents. And, like, the methodology of clutch of currents on the format. Sorry about that.
Wow, that was probably the most awkward thing you've said.
Right. I mean,
the methodology of clutch of currents on the format.
What I'm trying to say is that there's a lot of ways of answering your big stupid idiots, like whether it's clutch of currents, royal spout, sheer drop, even something like a bone splinters or tightening coils. I feel
tightening
like
tightening coils. So good.
I played a guy who's doing an Eldrazi ramp deck, and he does this whole ramp thing, and he gets a Breaker of Armies out, and then I Stasis Snare it, and then it's just not a factor for the rest of the game. Or in one game,
if your point is removal spells deal with big creatures, very good call.
But my point is that
I do feel like there's slightly more removal in this format.
Think
than
about
in,
a format like Theros, right, where you didn't have, you know, there was like.
Well, in Theros, when you battle shipped up, like, you'd get your dudes after they killed your...
Right.
So your creatures were a little more
But
resilient.
There wasn't also a whole lot of, like, point-and-click removal, too, that felt like in that format. Like, Bounce was really good, but...
Yeah, but there also was, like, you know, there was, like, God's Willing, which was always in those decks, too. And you're like,
right.
I kill your guy. And you're like,
yeah.
For one, you're like, nope.
Nope, make my guy bigger.
Right.
I do feel like there's a lot of removal in this format.
There's
like,
a lot of removal
typical.
In this format that kind of keeps the like... going all in on your battle cruiser magic very much intact. And I was also thinking about this on the way home too, which is that, like, there's a big difference between not having Annihilator on your big Eldrazi. You're like smiling at me, Evan, but like
no, hold on. There's a difference between not having your Annihilator on Eldrazi
and having something like Trample on an Eldrazi.
Okay.
Because what happens is,
yes,
you get
a huge difference.
You get in these late game scenarios, and you may have this big Eldrazi guy that you can cast, but at that point in the game, they may just have three creatures to block it with. Whereas if when you had these kind
Or you have like the stupid like 7-8 ruin processor.
Right.
And you're like, was it ruin processor?
Yeah. Or something like that, where it's like you gain five life.
The guy that gains five life.
Costs 7.
I think he's like a 5-7.
No, he's a 7-8.
He's a 7-8. He's probably one of the better ones to play at common.
But he's the same kind of thing. Like, it's like so many games I've played, and they're like, play that big dude, and they gain 5. And I'm like, okay, and then I'll just swing over, and then they're like, attack, and you're like, eh, I block.
Right. You're right. They attack you, and you're like, okay, I block with my 4-5 and my 4-4, and I'll lose one of my guys and eat your creature. Whereas if, you know, you think about something like Ulamog's Crusher. That came out. Turn sideways, immediately you lose 2 permanents. Then if you double block it on top of that, you're getting like 4-for-1 for the card. So there was such a bigger payoff for those Eldrazi when you cast them, where in this format, the Eldrazi kind of, they either just get clutch occurrence, you know, they've been sandbagging their point-click removal if you're playing the Eldrazi deck, or they kind of block it profitably. Like, I had a guy with
I don't think that's the issue so much, though.
All right, maybe that's not the issue, but the payoff just doesn't seem to be as prevalent.
Well, I think the problem is if you want to ramp into Eldrazi, you have to play green, and as we've noticed, green is terrible.
Okay, that could be also... That also could be really the thing. I mean, I think they really tried to build the Eldrazi strategy as the other green strategy besides Landfall, and that didn't work out.
Is that like, is that like the other pork?
Yeah.
The other white meat? green strategy?
Because, I mean, like, the times that the Eldrazi do hit the battlefield, it can be pretty backbreaking. I mean,
if they're rare or mythic.
I don't know. I've had that 7-8 make some boards that I just can't like.
Right. I mean, the 7-8 can be pretty good. The 5 life. I mean,
yeah. Like, the Breaker of Armies. You know, it's gonna like.
I just never see. But I never see that guy do anything.
Here's the thing. In when I was playing the black white deck on Wednesday.
Well, you can sit there and drain them.
Well, that was the whole thing. He like plays a 7-8, and then I'm at like 26 life, and he's at 12 or 9 or something, and
it's
taking,
like, sure, come at me,
and it's like, okay, whatever, like, come at me, I'll maybe chump it with this or something. Or I had a guy play a Breaker of Armies and I stasis snared it right away. Or in the other game, I had my Felidar Sovereign, which granted is a bomb, but I had my Felidar Sovereign out, and I had Clostria Nightwatch, and he attacks with Breaker Armies, and I'm like, well, forced to double block, like, he kills the Felidar Sovereign, but I keep my 4-5.
Or you just fucking gain a life and then block with that stupid vampire that gained death touch.
Right, something like that.
Okay, whatever.
But, you know, he had that and another big thing, so I trade and kill his Breaker of Armies, and then I untap and
wreck him.
6 mana, sheer drop his other big creature and make a 3-3, and it's just kind of like,
you know,
there's ways of dealing with it that the Eldrazi kind of feel underwhelming, is what I'm trying to say.
Are you saying the Eldrazi are going to lose?
Or meanwhile...
It depends on the colors you're into. I mean, like... Yeah. White has so many removal spells that kill anything, like Stasis Snare, Sheer Drop.
And granted, Stasis Snare is uncommon, so like caveats of seeing it.
Why don't we just go right up to Quarantine Field?
Yeah,
right. Boom!
Black has Grip of Desolation. You know, the blue can really punish people with Clutch of Currents or Royal Spout, which is a lot...
And Tightening Coils, too. Don't underestimate that.
Tightening Coils.
I did that last week.
Yeah.
Like, put Tightening Coils on the Breaker of Armies. I'm like, go ahead. Splinters. I'm like, go ahead, attack with your 4-10.
It really depends on the colors you're in. But I don't know. I mean, I forget where you're going with this at first.
I mean...
It started with that really bad, like... formulation of something.
The methodology. You know,
the methodology of Clutch of Currents.
Of Clutch of Currents on the format. Yes. I mean, I'm talking about this because there was a great article.
I think Clutch of Currents is more of a collaborator than an auteur. He's kind of a...
It means it's not an ally, right?
Yeah.
It's not a collaborator.
It's definitely not.
There was a great article posted on MTG Goldfish. They do this thing, you know, once the format's been out for 90 days or something like that, they print this great article where they analyze something like 83,000 games of Magic Online and limited draft of BFC. And they, you know, break the format down with the cards that were in the most winning decks when they were cast or things like that. And it's funny because referencing this, they basically spell it out that, you know, green is bad. Of the 10 two-color archetypes, green is played only about 2/3 as often as the other combinations, while still winning 10% less on average.
Although, so every once in a while, if a bunch of good green cards are open and there's one guy in green, he just has this insane deck. I played a guy once who...
That still loses more than statistically.
I'm saying every once in a while you get that one deck where the guy's got like Urn Reef Hydra and the... What's the Converge Trample guy for four
the
mana?
The 6-6?
He's the 2-2 that gets a...
The Bellower? The Woodland Bellower?
Woodland Bellower. Undergrowth Champion, and he just had like one of every like rare or mythic just in his deck.
Well, I think the thing
every once in a while that happens, you're like, I should have picked these cards up.
I think though, if green is successful, and it's just a nice little side note, but Tom Martell won Grand Prix Atlanta.
Yeah,
and his stuff was all like, you know, he was playing like Bant,
right?
Which is kind of weird, but he was just splashing blue, but. His stuff was all like super aggressive, like green stuff, with like just hints of like, you know, card advantage or like, you know, like the Grove Tender Druids that make the plants and stuff like that.
Right.
He had a bunch triggers. He had a bunch of snapping gnarlids and stuff. So it seems like the not like playing like Orm Reef Hydra is the way to go. It seems like, you know, something that's much more, you know, card advantage or aggressive is better if you're going with green.
Right. Well, it's
maybe Urn Reef Hydra. I mean, that card.
It's just everything we just talked about. It's like, you know, you spend.
But it doesn't have trample, right?
Yeah, it does.
It does. Okay, that's good.
But
Removal kills bombs. Yes, you're right. Removal kills bombs. That doesn't make bombs bad, and that doesn't make putting bombs in your deck bad.
No. It doesn't. It's funny because talking about that, even though Greed is underplayed at the cards that when cast are. Oftentimes in the... How am I trying to say this statistic?
You're talking about the overrun effect.
I'm talking about the overrun effect. I'm talking about... So in this article, too, they break down the cards that when they hit the battlefield often result in the player who controls them winning the game or the game state winning.
Yeah. When said card comes in, this player wins X percent of the time.
Right. And so the... those cards at 5 mana and 6 mana, so at uncommon is Taju Warcaller, which is a green card, which has a great overrun effect. It makes sense that it would be a statistical anomaly because when that card enters the battlefield, it probably will result in wins really highly because it's just that overrun effect where it's like you don't play it when you're losing. And then, an interesting though, at common,
why can't I find this
at 6 mana cost? Taju Beastmaster is the 6 mana common most winning kind of card.
We are talking about the MTG Goldfish article.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's titled. If you want to look it up, it's titled 83,000 Games of Battle for Zendikar Limited Analyzed. And it's a really good article. I would urge you to check it out. It's really funny. Obviously,
it's not limited analysis draft. Battle for Zendikar times 3?
No.
God damn it.
Just look at what he said. 83,000 games.
I'm trying.
That's literally the title.
I'm trying.
But it's great. You know, it's funny. So at 2 mana cost, Colostria Healer is the common card. That's in the most winning decks. Interesting. Uncommon, Forerunner of Slaughter.
And if you're going to do this, just need to like just bust out what the number is just so people know what it is, too. So there's a number associated. So when this card is played,
Right. They actually don't break down the individual statistics. This is just the most highly winning percentage for when the card.
I can't find this article
because I remember hearing some of the pros talk about this, and they look at this data very very positively.
November
as well.
10th. This was over a week ago.
And
I read it this week.
Well, we are. You know, 1 week past our podcast, so it does make sense we would talk about it now.
Anyways, why don't I run through some of this? So
this was last Wednesday.
At three mana cost, the common card is Eldrazi Skyspawner. Obviously, I think this is a kind of agreed upon first pick now in this format. Drawn as Emissaries at uncommon, again showing the black white life gain deck being really good. And then rare and mythic is Wasteland Strangler. Now, what's interesting is if you look at the article, they do make a caveat for the processing cards because it shows up quite a lot in the most winning cards. So like Drowner of Hope is at 6 mana cost. And they say this is probably a little bit of a statistical anomaly because if you are ahead where you can get the ingest triggers going off the processed card, that you're probably in a more favorable game state anyway because you've exiled either something through a removal spell or you've been attacking with some of these ingest creatures. So they're trying to kind of take into account that probably these are not cards that are doing well on average in a parity game state or something like that, the kind of the snowball effect.
I don't know. It's kind of a red herring.
You think so?
Yeah, because, I mean, like, if you're behind, if you're just getting beat down, are you going to not cast your 3-2? You're just going to let them kill you without playing the 3-2 to block?
Are you talking about this?
So they say,
oh, right.
They say Eldrazi processors, which are unlikely to be cast until after the player has hit their opponent with an ingest creature, are also likely candidates for having win rates higher than one might suspect. I can kind of see that, but that assumes that if you're losing, you won't play it. I can see that happening with a 5-mana 2-1, whereas that 5-mana 2-1 is not going to help you keep from dying.
Yeah.
A 3-mana 3-2 on curve, if you're getting beaten down, would
it's fine.
Definitely
right. Fine
keep from dying.
Yeah.
I kind of see what they're saying, but I don't know if that's that big of an effect.
I like the thing that I was talking about, which I think is just like a subset of this, which is the data when they look at when this card comes into play, you are this percentage to win the game. And I like that because that takes into account all of the, regardless of whether you're winning or losing.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. I don't think they're saying giving you an exact percentage of how likely you are to win the game. It says win percentage when cast. Creatures are the easiest to evaluate using win percentage when cast, since they have the fewest restrictions as to when it's good to cast them.
I like the one line here. The least cast card was Crumble to Dust, which showed up a mere 25 times.
Right.
Out of 83,000 games.
Hey, it makes sense.
Wow.
I mean, when are you going to cast that card? I guess if your opponent has, like...
Awaken?
Does it destroy a land or a base?
It's non-basic. Non-basic land.
Yeah, it's non-basic.
So, it doesn't do anything for Awaken. Maybe if someone has, like,
boarded it against somebody.
If you're playing, like, someone who's playing green with a million Fertile Thickets, and, right. like, that's how they fix their mana... Man, just wrecks them. It takes like five lands from their deck.
This would actually be a great card in this set if it just let you kill a land.
Right.
Well, and it wouldn't be that powerful either, right?
Well, you do have the 4-mana red card that allows you to kill at instant speed.
It's a volcanic something or another.
Yeah, geyser.
Volcanic upheaval.
Upheaval. Yeah.
That card's really good against...
Awaken.
Awaken. Crumble to Dust, I hadn't really thought of this before, but if you see someone with like four of... one type of non-basic land, like the
come into play tapped and
yeah, trigger a thing. If they have four of one of those, bring that in every time.
Boom.
Because if you take four lands out of their deck, they're down to 14 lands.
And right. And also like probably does like some kind of fixing, like you get like three of their evolving wilds, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if they have like three evolving wilds, then it screws their fixing a bunch. But if it's just like. Like, you can really get some.
I mean,
with that,
I was playing two Blighted Step and an Evolving Wild in my deck, so I was playing 18 land.
I feel like if it's... I wouldn't bring it in to get two cards. Like, that's
right.
It's not kind of lame.
Worth it.
But if it's, like, four or five, definitely. You're going to do so much damage to them.
Yeah. Anyways, I would definitely recommend at home, if you're interested in diving into some of the nitty-gritty of this format, I always look forward to this MTG Goldfish article when it comes out, because it's just a really good window into what's
Apparently,
going on.
You weren't looking forward enough. This is like over a week old.
Well, you know.
Cole, today's like the 18th or something.
Right.
It's actually the 20th.
Right, but the article actually came out after our
came out on the 10th.
Last podcast.
Yes. So it's past.
So I couldn't bring it up because I don't have a time machine, Evan.
It came out last Tuesday. When did we record?
We recorded at midnight with a creaking chair. And my giant glass of alcohol that you could hear for miles. anyways.
On Thursday.
And on
two
Thursday,
days after this article posted. I remember because I butchered that poor improv troupe's improv set. Man, that was... It was fine. But
anyways.
It's hilarious.
Remember how you butchered the Cracksacker Barry last time?
Right. You did it so good, too, the opening segment.
I tried.
Let's see if we can do it again.
Again, you mean Crack, Sack, and Bury? The segment where we take three cards and a theme and choose one we want to crack and one we want to sack and one we want to bury?
I mean that segment.
Yes, that one.
That's the one. Okay, great.
Great.
I mean, I basically did it. I didn't say all the other parts of
it. Well, now you're ruining it.
See, when I start to say the thing like a question, I don't want to like say...
You just gotta go in. You just gotta commit.
Crack, Sack, and Barry is the thing we take three cards in a theme. Just what do we want to crack? We're excited to play it. What do we want to sack? We'll play it if we'll sacrifice it if we have to. What do we want to bury if it gets destroyed? We'll regenerate it.
Wow.
We're going to Wizards of the Gas. Well, we got guards.
What do we got this week?
This week on Crack, Sack, and Barry, we're going to do 5 mana uncommon creatures. And those creatures are, drumroll please. Okay, stop. You didn't really need to do that. Were you purring?
Look, I want to play along.
You were just purring.
Yeah, I was purring.
So suddenly he's like a cat. Cat
beast. We need a soundboard. I would go ham on a soundboard on this show. First is Ulamog's Reclaimer. 4 and a blue for a 2/5 Eldrazi Processor with Devoid. When he comes into play, you can process one card, and if you do, you return an instant or sorcery from your graveyard to your hand.
Oh, that card would have been so good in my Awakened deck.
Right.
It's great.
Though I didn't have any ingest, so.
Right.
Card number 2. Tadruru Warcaller. 3 green green for a 2/1 elf warrior ally with rally. Your team gets +2/+2. A sweet card. And finally, Corn Tanglers, which is 5 and a white for a 3/4.
4 and a white?
4 and a white. For a 3/4 core soldier ally. He has rally.
He has rally.
when you get rally, you tap a creature an opponent controls. You can't tap one of your own creatures.
No, you have to tap one of theirs.
I don't know how relevant that is in life, but.
That's interesting. That
could be.
The allies and the rallies.
Some words sound like other words.
Rallies have a rally.
Some words don't really sound that much like other words, but since we have dumb brains, we confuse them.
Yep.
All right, I'm going to go first.
Do it.
I'm going to take... Jeez. All right, I'm going to take Taju Warcaller.
Tajuru.
How'd you two-roo?
I'm going to take him first.
It's like Scooby-Doo.
Look, I know we've all just crapped on green for 42 minutes.
And yet you're still going to fucking pick it.
I'm going to pick... All right, here's my thing, though. This is one of the few cards that you want to have in your green deck. You want to have multiples in your green deck. And if you get past one after taking one, and you can wind up in a deck with a couple in it, like, that's pretty good.
The word you're looking for is payoff.
Right, payoff. But here's the thing. The payoff in green is entirely dependent on what everybody opens in your pool. Because you're going to end
up... No, it doesn't.
I think so.
Nobody's drafting green. It doesn't matter.
But that's the whole thing. Nobody's drafting green.
That's what I'm saying. So it doesn't matter what people open, because the green will come to you.
But if they just open crap green, then you're just going to get past crap green.
Right. If they open all... If the pool opens 3 Oren Reef Hydras, you'll probably end up with the 3 Oren Reef Hydras. So it's dependent on the collective, what the pool will be for green. But if it's good, and Taju Warcaller is one of the good cards in it, you'll take it. I mean, this would have to be a really bad pack for me to pick Taju Warcaller, but if I'm looking at...
Tajuru
Warcaller. If I'm looking at Crumble to Dust, I'm looking at Ally Encampment as my rare. Crumble to Dust is an uncommon.
Man, you're hoping that Ally Encampment wheels too.
Right, Blighted Step.
And it probably does.
Probably will.
As another uncommon, and like something else crappy. Then, in my commons, if I don't have a Sky Spawner in my commons, then I might take the Taju Warcaller. Because the upside of it Tajuru Warcaller. Because the upside of it is there. Like if you get Bueller. A retreat to Coral, I mean if you get a retreat to Emiria and this guy out, like you can go to town.
Oh man, I went to that town and that town was fucking phenomenal. When you play him with a Retreat to Emyria,
right.
You know how big your creatures get?
No, I...
+4/+4. That's right. How big.
Boom.
Oh, no, wait. I guess you have to play a land on that turn.
Yes.
That might be difficult. It won't be.
Anyways, I think this card's fine. I think I'm going to go for my sack. This is actually where it gets, I think, a little bit more interesting because I like the 2/5. What is it? It gets back a guy?
Ulamog's Reclaimer.
Ulamog's Reclaimer.
We would not have the most beautiful of podcasts if you didn't remember like 90% of every card name.
Right. Well, it's my secret trick is that Ulamog's, I don't remember card names.
So I think you said Ulamog.
Ulamog, right. This guy's actually surprisingly good. And
he's got a big butt.
He's got a big butt. He blocks really well because of that butt.
bubble butt.
He's got a bubble butt. But what I like about it is that I like blue a lot more in this format. I feel like Eldrazi Sky Spawner, Clutch of Currents are great commons. There are plenty of other good commons you can pick up. If you are in an Ingest deck, he's great. And I find myself often picking black early, trying to prospect into blue, trying to end up in... I kind of like the blue-black process deck when you can get it going with the Benthic Infiltrators.
Oh, that guy's so good.
Right? You get the Infiltrator going. You, like, use a complete disregard. Then you play this guy. You get your complete disregard back or something like that. He works nicely in that deck. He does make you have to work kind of hard for your spell regrowth. He's no Memnonic Wall, but... He's a little bit better.
Mnemonic Wall, and he's way better than Mnemonic Wall.
But you have to work for it. Like, you have to get that Ingest going. If you get the Ingest going, yeah, you get him 2/5. He's way better.
That's why you have your...
It's not guaranteed.
That's why you get your Benthic Infiltrator just gets in there.
Right.
I mean, you got to work to make that ability work in the first place. You have to get an instant or sorcery in your graveyard.
Right. But that, if you're playing the removal...
The Floron Mnemonic Wall is a 5-mana 0/4 defender. The Floron Ulamog's Reclaimer is a 2/5 that can attack for 5 mana.
That's true. He's
card's so much better.
Okay. Whoa, buddy.
I've got some of... God damn it! okay, you can finish.
That's where I'm going to put him in my sack. I'm going to put the core in my berry because...
Well, at least he knew it was a core.
Guys, right. Can we stop saying that we're going to put things in our cracks and sacks? I just like...
Okay.
I'm sure we have some listeners out there who are with me on this.
I'm going to bury the Core Entanglers.
Thank you.
I just not super impressed with this guy. I guess... Here's the problem. If I'm in red-white allies, I'm prioritizing my 5 slot to have harder-hitting threats than this or removal spells like Stone Fury. I like the double strike. You know, you give all your guys double strike, or you... play the 4/4 with Menace. So, and you just don't want to play a lot of 5s anyway. In black-white allies deck, this guy doesn't do a whole lot because it's tapping them before you're not pressured to attack a lot in that deck, or if you don't have to. Like, he can be nice, but if you know, his body is okay, what is he, like a 3/4?
Yeah, 3/4.
Yeah, so you know, another point of toughness, and I'm probably on board, but as a 3/4 later in the game, he seems lower impact than he should be.
Okay, these two guys on the
picture. He's got a good butt for a white creature. I don't mean to get racial here.
The two little guys on these things make me think of those guys from The Matrix.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Right.
That's like weird.
The twins with the dreads.
The yes. Matrix 2.
Yep.
Where it all went wrong.
Well, I think I'm going to... I'm with you on all counts, Cole.
Really? Okay.
Wow. I think...
All these cards...
You going green?
Yeah.
Because if you were blue, you'd die.
So it's weird, like... It would have to be a really bad pack for me to want to first pick any of these cards.
Right.
The green one's just the way more powerful, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If I was trying to hedge into one of these colors, I would want to hedge with the Reclaimer.
The blue card?
Or yeah.
Devoid?
He can be blue, that's fine.
Okay.
I mean, he's like objectively, you know, if you like, if you took a picture of that card and then like reduced the resolution on it over and over and over again till it was one pixel, that would be a blue pixel. Because right. It's definitely a blue looking card. It'll look bluish gray, but anyway, we don't need to mince colors here. But the Tajiru War Collar is just the most powerful. I mean, I'd rather have a green deck with Tajiru War Collar. Like, if I was in a green deck, I would want Tajiru War Collar more than I would want Willemog's Reclaimer in a blue deck, if that makes any sense.
Therein lies the crux of the problem.
Yeah.
Because you have to be in green to play him.
And I also got to do some crazy fun broken things with Tajiru War Collar on Wednesday, and that felt really awesome.
For your 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah.
Standings.
That was... Look, like I said...
Just fucking throwing you under the bus.
The losses were close, or lots of mulliganing.
Yep. All right, it's fair. It's fair.
But, yeah, I'm agreeing with you on all accounts.
Okay. Larry, you going to mix it up, or are you going to...
I'm not playing green.
Oh! Talking about under the bus.
I'm going to crack the Reclaimer, just because I really do like blue a lot.
Right.
And I do think... I've actually not played with the Entanglers at all.
Right.
And all the times I've drafted, I've actually never had the card. Even in all the pre-releases either, which also probably just means I'm not playing that card very much either.
Meh.
So I'm going to sack the War Collar, probably just because what you've been talking about, the whole, you know, in a vacuum, whatever, but I'm not taking a green card. I'm not even taking
We're
a rare
a green card.
I'm not even taking a green rare likely. So, I mean, I can't even imagine what's the best green rare or mythic. Undergrowth Champion?
Kiora, because you get to play blue. Splash green.
True. Okay. Good point. The best monogreen one, probably Undergrowth Champion. That game can just... That card... You get two counters on that card, and it's a fucking problem.
Yeah.
And it's just whenever land comes into play, it gets it?
Yeah.
Although you do have exile effects, right?
Not many,
though, right?
Complete Disregard has to be 3 or smaller.
So right. After this, like you said, you get the second counter on there, you're done.
4/4.
The one time I played...
Touch of Evil.
Touch of Evil.
Touch of Evil.
I mean, you can, like, Stasis Snare.
Right, but, I mean, there's no common way you can really deal with it.
You can Sheer Drop it. You can... There's, like, destroy effects. It just prevents damage.
Oh, okay, right. So you do...
So
that all those things probably do.
Against red, man, you are just fucked.
Yeah.
You can Demon's Grasp it.
That's not red.
Nope.
Against red, you're screwed. Yeah.
I mean, I played against... it's got the same clause as Urn Reef Hydra, where landfall gets a 1-1 counter. If it's a forest, it gets 2 1-1 counters.
Yeah.
So I played against the guy once who turned 4, dropped his Undergrowth Champion, and played...
Forest?
Evolving Wilds.
Oh, no. You
go grab a forest.
Dirty.
Here's a 5/5. And I'm looking at my Stone Fury like, I can't even. I can do 5 to it, kind of.
Can you imagine that with the Blighted Woodland?
Right.
Put your Blighted Woodland into play, trigger.
Oh, yeah.
Sack it, get 2 forests, trigger.
I did that with my... my Snapping Gnarlids.
Sweet.
Pretty sweet. Can nice. Wall +3/+3. Snapping Gnarlids are fun.
Snapping Gnarlids are fun. That's definitely the best green common. But even on like Wednesday, I saw lots of Snapping Gnarlids go past me, and I would dip toes.
Didn't even pique your interest. At
right. I mean, this was also because I was firmly committed to black white, so it's easy to put the blinders on and just like draft it, and it was open and it was there and it was great. But I've often found myself like earlier in the format dipping toes in green, and then you end up with kind of a 3-color green deck.
That's terrible,
and it's just not very good, and you kind of maybe squeak out 2 and 1 if you're lucky.
That's kind of my favorite thing about green. The one thing I liked about my deck on Wednesday, right, is it was so much different than any other deck I had drafted so far. Right, I mean, it's
incredibly unique. Like, I've had green decks that you're like, you do a little, like, ingest, and then you do, like, some, you make a bunch of 1/1s, and then you kind of, you know, you have some ramp, but you also have, like, you know, Swarm Surge or Taju War Call. Like, you do all these kind of, like, go wide, and maybe some sacrifice effects, and, like, maybe this or that, but you're not, like, concentrated in something in the way that the top tier decks feel like.
Yeah,
you're
definitely
just all in on, you know, colorless, and then everything works together like this well-oiled machine. You just run over people.
Right. Yeah,
you kind of like do a little this, little that, and if your draws are good and you get some of your bombs that you're able to splash for, like, you can get there. And if you're playing a similarly slow person, like, it helps a lot. But
you definitely have to do a lot more footwork to put up the same amount of powers.
Right,
a lot of the other decks. If you do get some of those bombs, then, you know, you have some of those bombs, and those bombs can be bombing.
Right, and if you draw them, you can probably win games.
Yeah, and wreck face, but the sort of, like, mid-level of power, you have to do, like, some footwork to even make it match up
right
to, like, the
other
decks.
Your removal spell, the fight card, is, like, you have to ask, you have to do a lot of work to, like,
that
make
thing,
that work.
That thing is going super late in every draft
I see. I see it go around, like, I saw all the, you know, war collars.
It wheels every time.
It wheels around. And I know, I feel like I know why now, is because so many of the green creatures feel actually,
they're small.
Small, yeah, compared to everything else. Yeah. And, like, even with all the landfall triggers that they're trying to get, like, it's not that good. Like, the only time I've made that card really do good things when I used it primarily for the fact that it was an instant and was able to get around, like, yeah, combat triggers or, like, combat effects, or, like, kill your guy in response, kill your other guy, and, like, make him fight or something like that. But never because I would just, like, untap and cast it the way you would with, like, Savage Punch or something like that, and then attack them with your 6/4 bear now, and, you know, it's never worked that way.
It was when I was watching the Atlanta, I thought it's kind of what you were just talking about, Evan. It was interesting how they were analyzing the draft, and they were watching Owen Turtenwald draft, and he had a mostly colorless matters kind of deck, but he had, like, two, like, Slide Runners and, like, a Valakut Predator and, you know, some other things, like an Outnumber. So he had, like, a serious number of colored spells in his deck, which is, you know, not really what you want to go if you want the full-out thing. But they're like, you know, he's just going for, like, you know, like, colorless matters, not I need to absolutely have this. Like, you know what I mean? He was like, look, there are some times where, you know, power level and curve considerations are more important than just making sure that I have a colorless dude on turn two or a spell or whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I like this. I, even though green is kind of a blemish on this format, I still think that this is one of the better draft formats in a while that I've played. Like, I'd probably give it a B-.
I love it.
With, like, something like Innistrad being an A+, Khans being an A, and, like, M14 being a D, and, like, Origins and
M14 was way better than this. Oh, no, sorry, never mind.
No, M14 where Divination was, like, a first pick?
M14, I was thinking M14 is way better than Greed in this format. that's where my mind was at.
That's where, no, I agree with that.
I really liked M14, but...
But, like, Origins, I would probably have given, like, a C. Like, it was
dude,
fine.
I love a format where goddamn, what's the 6-mana, draw 3 cards as a first pick. That's, like, an amazing format to me.
Yeah.
Don't you want to, like, first pick Divination? Man, that seems great.
That was not...
You want to first pick 2-drops, yeah.
Like, the brass tacks or magic are more... The slow formats are a little too slow. I mean, this format feels like it's slowed down nicely, where you can do bigger, better things, but there are aggressive decks that can exist. Like, you can run people over with a red-white deck or a red-green landfall deck. They may not be the dominant archetype at the pod, but if you can get the 2-color pair that supports it, you can, like, definitely do it. Where I felt like in M14, like, aggressive decks didn't exist, and I didn't like that you couldn't aggro people out. I like a mixture of both, and I feel like this format does a nice thing. I think, unfortunately, when we look back on it, though, you're gonna say, like, yeah, 4 out of 5 colors were good, and 1 was terrible.
Except in sealed.
Yeah, greens are right, sealed.
Want to talk about standard?
Let's talk about some standard. We didn't have a standard GP this weekend, but Evan, you're still playing with a black-white tokens?
Sure.
That sounded enthusiastic.
Sure. I almost went to a tournament.
You couldn't find... Did you get silk wraps finally?
I beseeched Facebook for silk wraps.
It was
silk
some
racks.
Frantic...
I don't think there's a single silk wrap in a... In a
5 mile radius.
Like a 100 mile radius. There's just no more silk wraps.
It's like, what is it, 350 now?
I don't know. I bought a couple of them for $2 on TCG Player, but...
I would have given you mine, but I was in Seattle.
Yeah, you and fucking everybody else. Our friend Ben Williams from Portland was like, I got your silk wraps, 350. I was like, motherfucker. You can't help me.
But are you playing it on Cockatrice or?
Yeah, and just like solitaring it and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a cool deck. I've been reading every like article that kind of looks at different ways to build it and trying to figure out the best way to make it happen. I think I like I really like playing three Painful Truths because Painful Truths is like an insane card.
Wow, you're up to three?
Man, it's so good.
Does it play normally three? I thought it played only one.
Draws you three cards.
Two?
You can play as many as you want. I'm going to play three.
I mean, that was showing up in Legacy.
Paul Rizzo had four Read the Bones.
I don't blame him.
I'm actually just saying that I am commenting on how your analysis seems to fit with one of the great pros.
Oh, thank you. The thing about, so I mean, other than the card just being really powerful, Patrick Chapin played some amount of Painful Truths in his Legacy deck
to a
day two finish at SeaTac. The black white the Esper tokens, so called Esper tokens. Oh Lord, here we go. I'm gonna pick up my phone. We're good. It has a glut of like 4 and 5 mana plays,
mm-hmm.
and not a lot to do on plays two through three.
Mm-hmm.
You have your Knight of the White Orchid. You've got your
aforementioned silk wraps.
Silk wraps. You've got like four silk wraps, four Knight of the White Orchid, four. Hangerback Walker. I've been playing with Seeker of the Way.
Oh yeah,
which has been really, really
How's
great.
How's that going?
It's fantastic, especially with Painful Truths. When you can go turn two Seeker, turn three Painful Truths, draw three cards, lose three life, and give your Seeker of the Way +2/+1/+1 lifelink, gain that life right back.
Right, and have a 3/3 that can get in and gain some tempo.
Yeah, and one of the big things. Like, the format's really hostile to Hangerback Walker right now with, like, Anafenses and Silk Wraps running around everywhere. So frequently, you aren't going to get the 1/1 tokens out of it anyways.
But the other thing about it is that's weird is that you just... So, I've been playing the Obzon Blue Aggro.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking with the guys in Seattle and also Matt and Zach. And I was just like... So envision the world where you get your mana and you cast your hanger back on turn two. What's the reasonably earliest time in an aggro deck that you think you're going to have one mana open to turn that into something else?
Exactly.
You're
going to
be casting something on turn three,
mm-hmm.
something on turn four, and maybe on turn five you might even be doing two things. Like, it just, like, it doesn't fit the deck.
Yeah, it's really hard to just find the extra. I guess I shouldn't say it isn't hard to find the extra mana to tap it, to pump it, but if you do find that mana, it's usually because you're playing your Battlelands tapped, or you're playing off curve somehow.
Or you're missing your 3-drop or something like that.
Yeah, you're not utilizing your mana as best you can every turn if you're pumping that thing.
Which is really, really critical in an aggro deck, right?
Yeah, I mean, and just in decks in general, I mean... There's so much pressure on the 2-drop slot right now, with the two sort of biggest decks, it seems like, are Abzan Aggro and Jeskai Black, which are both very sort of assertive decks, maybe not incredibly aggro, you know, as we typically think of aggro decks, but they're very assertive, you know, they want to get out and they want to start attacking. And you can't just sit there and pump your Hangerback Walker. And Seeker of the Way in this deck has, like, 8+3. It has four. So in the Hangerback versions, it's four Hangerbacks, four Knight of the White Orchid, three.
Waymate Rock?
Wingmate Rock, and then the rest are non-creature spells.
Right. That's not a lot of creatures.
That's not a lot of creatures. So if you just switch those out for Seekers of the Way, they can, you know, they pump all the time.
Right, and they get all the triggers off your non-creature spells, which is the majority of your deck.
They help gain you back tempo by gaining you life and giving you a slightly bigger threat that you don't have to put mana into to make a decent-sized threat that can, you know, sort of rumble with the other threats that are out there at the in the early parts of the game.
Gets past opposing Knight of White Orchids.
Yeah, and also I wanted to cut one of the two Sorins because Sorin's kind of underwhelming but can be, like, insanely backbreaking occasionally. Mm-hmm. And is also, it's just great, like, being able to gain some life back against aggro decks and whatnot. And having Forseeker of the Ways can definitely, like, serve that purpose as well. It's great against decks that are kind of beating you down a little bit. Being able to play Seeker of the Way and then hold up removal, because then you can, like, block, kill a thing, trade for a creature and gain some life, and then you're, like, up life and, you know,
kind of blow out the red decks.
Yeah, and I've been really liking the card. It feels broken when you can turn two Seeker of the Way, turn three Painful Truths for three.
That must be great.
You, like, have
and
so
then
much...
like, what, turn four Gideon, now you get another trigger, now you cash in, you make an emblem, now you get a 4/4.
And all the while, like, I think the most important thing there is exactly what you said, is it doesn't cost you anything.
Yeah, it doesn't cost you mana.
Yeah.
It just lets you continue playing the game you want to play without making you have to play off curve.
Right.
And the deck doesn't need more, like, the better part, the thing that Hangerback Walker has over Seeker of the Way, obviously, is that it makes a better sort of later game threat and is also a little more resilient to removal, or sweepers at least, because the removal right now is very hostile. Like, pinpointed removal is very hostile. Like, it's all, there's a lot of exile effects everywhere.
Right. With Abden Charm.
Yeah, and just like Anafenza, you know, just
right. Anafenza's great.
But so it's really just like sweepers is kind of where he's great, that you can just keep pumping him up against control decks, and if they sweep your board, then, like, hey, get a bunch of tokens. But this deck is already so good against decks that are trying to stabilize that way, with, like, four Shambling Vents and Planeswalkers. You know, it's got, like, six Planeswalkers or whatever.
Plus Secure the Ways. And Secure the Ways. Can do the same thing.
Yeah, so it's just, like, not much of an issue. But, yeah, the deck's so much fun. Yeah. I really like it. I think it has a tough matchup against Abzan, which is a bit of a problem because Abzan is really... it's a very popular deck.
Who would have thought?
I mean, like I said, I'm playing the same kind of thing. And for a long time, we've been trying to figure out what not to play for the Hangerback, for the exact same thing that you were talking about.
In, like, it's got Abzan?
Yeah, in the Abzan aggro.
That's a slightly tougher one.
It's a tougher one. And so initially...
it's like Rakshasa's Death Dealer has the same problem.
Terrible. Like, again, same thing. You don't have mana to just leave lying around, right?
Yeah.
And then there's so much removal that they just kill it in response, right?
Yeah.
So much exile stuff now.
Exile effects, right? So now you're like, doesn't matter.
Exactly. So now you're like, okay, so my super cool thing is like, or sacrifice, even, like, you know, now they've got like Crackling Doom, right? You're like,
right.
So I can't protect against that or that, or it's just like terrible. So for a little while, we were looking at Heir of the Wild because, you know, it's really relevant with, like, you know, Rhinos and Anafenzas. You can get the trigger, right. So you do that.
So it becomes a 3/3 Death Toucher, and it'll kind of trade up.
Always trades up if need be.
Although it feels like Heir of the Wilds without that trigger
is meh,
yeah,
right?
Like, you need to get Anafenza.
Knight of the White Orchid seems to stomp Heir of the Wilds.
Yeah. So the card that, and I just was, I actually came to the same conclusion, but, like, just randomly, like, just going through Gather was... article that Ross Merriam was talking about is that he's actually had the exact same issue that you had, Evan, with not wanting to play that and trying to figure out what that card was. And the card that he settled upon is the Gnarlid. The
Snapping Gnarlid?
Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting.
So kind of the exact same thing you were saying is, like, you don't have to spend mana. You just play land drops. And now it's a 3/3, so it can attack into a warden, right?
Right.
Which is really good.
Into a warden, into a knight.
Into a knight.
Another hanger, like, into a 2/2 hangerback.
How do the first couple, like, land plays go with Abzan, typically?
So usually it's, like, fetch land to forest to warden to pump up or play a Snapping Gnarlid. That's basically what you do. So the best thing you can possibly do
is,
like,
Snapping Gnarlid.
Yeah.
It seems like a
good
spot.
And it's all only one green, which is really great, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't have any, like...
it's really nice.
You couldn't play, like, you know, like a White of the Night Orchid or something there because of the restrictions.
Yeah, the mana's just too...
And there are worlds where you can potentially make him like a 4-4 and then fight with like Drew Homoka's command. Like you can fight a like another Anafenza or a Rhino.
Right.
So you like sack, it's a 4-4, give plus one and fight.
Yeah, it's so interesting.
So there's lots of really good things, and it all comes down to exactly what you were saying, Evan, is that it doesn't cost you mana. It just costs you land drops, and if you don't have land drops, well, you're already lost, right? I mean, that's it's completely different. You know, the problem wasn't the card; it was just that you got mana screwed. So, you know, so be it, right?
Right. Yeah. And with the number of fetches that you're playing too, you can often get multiple triggers in a turn too, as well. So,
yeah, I think it's playing. Is it playing 8 or 12 fetches?
I think it's almost playing 12. I think everything's playing like 12 fetches. I mean, it's crazy that the fetches are all like $20 now, and every deck is standard.
Might be playing like closer to 10.
Maybe it's. Everybody's playing 4 2 digits.
I know it has
4 Wooded Foothills.
I have my deck list right here.
Just okay.
But yeah, so it's at least 8. So, anyway.
Are you guys still playing Nissa?
No Nissa. Because I actually think, again, same thing. I think Nissa is just bad in that deck, right? It's just like, it's not what you want to do. And the other thing that I've also been looking at is, like I have the second cut in my deck. Again, same kind of thing. You don't want to be spending mana, right? You just spend cards. It feels like the first person to do two things in a turn wins.
Right.
So I've actually looked at cutting one of the Gideons. Main deck. I don't know what you guys think about that, but it's just because there's so many fours. There's like four Gideons and four Rhinos. And it just feels like sometimes you just need to be a little bit like faster, but like Gideon's so good too, though.
Yeah, when you're on the draw, with the Esper Tokens deck, when you're on the draw and you can turn three, play your knight, get your land, and then silk wrap a thing, it's like you stole back the tempo in like two different ways.
Yeah. Right.
Stole back the land tempo and killed their creature and like put a creature out. You know, it's it feels so good.
I love to see knights getting played. Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. Right now, we're in that point where in standard, it's not about who's going to brew the next new hot deck. It's about who's going to swap out five cards and beat the meta that weekend.
Yeah,
and this is where typically like a whole new type of pro comes to the table and starts winning things. I think that it's a it's interesting to look at, you know, Brad Nelson, who does really good at metagaming per the weekend. Doesn't mean that a rogue deck can't come along, and, you know, something like Green Ramp, you know, with Mastery of the Unseen doesn't show up for one weekend and Crush House, but...
Yeah, or
12 fetch lands.
Yeah.
Or you look at the, like, Grand Prix Brussels, and someone just, like...
Rally.
Busted out the Esper Dragons deck again. It was like, hey, look at this. Right. This is good right now. Let's do this.
It's funny, the international ones definitely get a lot more variance. Mm-hmm. I think that the dissemination of information is a little bit different.
I mean, they had the four color rally deck, right?
I don't, guys. Do we have to be one of those like what's the word?
U.S. centrist.
Oh God, motherfucking God, ethnocentric.
There you go.
We shouldn't be an ethnocentric.
No,
podcast.
We shouldn't, and it's not like
those Europeans. We know that the European brain does not compare to the American brain.
I'm not saying that. I'm
it's
saying that
the deck building skills
just different metagames. Different.
They have smaller frontal cortex lobes.
Well, this is not endorsed by Wizards of the Cast.
The women have more armpit hair.
That's true.
And thus cause the deck builders to play worse cards.
As for dragons.
Everybody knows there are no Jaces in Europe. Right. There's no Jaces outside of North America.
They didn't get their they didn't have their passport.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah.
Everybody in Europe went all in on Gideon. They thought Gideon or Kithion was going to be the next big thing, but
whoops. Speaking of the next big thing, we got a next big, oh my God, speculation, next spoilers.
Wild speculation.
Wild speculation time. Wild speculation time. Sky is going to fall. Everything's going to die. Or be amazing. but anyway, so
they're bringing back colorless.
We had three spoilers. Hold on. Let's just dive into it. Right now, wrap up the podcast. Last couple, 10 minutes, we'll talk about this. I'm sure you've heard about the information. Last 5 minutes, we'll talk about this. I'm sure you've heard about the information that has come out. Kozilek, the Great Distortion, was spoiled.
Has come out as transsexual. Transgendered, I'm sorry.
No, he's actually Iron Man.
He's actually Iron Man.
Right. He's got the palm laser.
Doesn't look like Iron Man.
All right. Let's
a little bit.
Screw Kozilek. He's a great card. He's cool. Eldrazi Ramp's got something. Let's talk about
All
right. He's a 12/12 legendary Eldrazi. When you cast him, if you have fewer than 7 cards in hand, draw cards equal to the difference. So that's great. Maybe draw 3 to 4 cards on average. He's got Menace.
Or 7.
Right? Or 7. He's got Menace, so you have to be blocking with 2 creatures. And then you can discard a card.
Glad they got that flavor, right?
Right. And then you can discard a card with converted mana cost X, counter-target spell with converted mana cost X, so that he protects himself. It's awesome. It's kind of cool, flavorful.
It's pretty crazy.
All right. But the elephant on the Kozilek is definitely this mana cost.
There's an elephant on Kozilek?
Yes. And it comes in the form of 8 colorless mana, diamond. Waste. I'm not sure. They spoiled another card. It's a basic land, full art, land, waste. And my favorite thing about this, as soon as it was spoiled, all the Facebook comments were, oh my God, the reprinting wasteland, .. 30 seconds later, oh, no.
Never mind.
No, I'm sorry.
But we're getting a new basic land.
We need wasteland and standard. That's the thing we
need. It taps for a whole, maybe taps for a different kind of mana. There have been no explanations. For some more answers or some more speculation, they also spoiled this card called Mirror Pool. It's a mythic land. It comes in the battlefield tap. It taps to add diamond to your mana pool.
Waste.
And then you can pay 2 and a waste and tap it, copy an instant or sorcery. Or you can pay 4 and a waste and tap it and copy a creature.
Oh, what about, don't forget, you have to sacrifice it.
You have to sacrifice the land, yes.
it doesn't keep doing this forever.
That would just be.
But my question to you guys, are we looking at like a 6 color with this? What's the deal? I mean, the sky is falling.
Yes. I mean, No.
Like snow covered land? Is it going to show up a little bit? Is there going to be waste walk? Is there going to be what's
waste walk?
It's a waste walker.
What are we dealing with here? Nobody knows.
A creature and a land is what we're dealing with.
No, 2 lands.
2 lands apparently.
So you can search wastes, right? Off of searching basic lands.
Well, so people are. I mean, I think the assumption is that this is a new basic land. I mean, it says the words basic land on it.
Right.
Which would mean it has all of the properties of a regular basic land. Anything that talks about, you can play as many of them as you want in your deck. It produces this basic land color. It's not a color, though. It's just like this weird waste mana. That's the thing I think that has to be answered here is we're not, is this a color? Is this a not a color?
I think it's just it's a specific colorless.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a specific
but it's
mana?
Still, it's like a type of mana, but
so, I mean, they did this with snow covered lands and Cold Snap where snow covered land. Well, but a snow-covered land would tap for
gendered?
A snow symbol, right? And then you could activate things with, like, snow, red, tap, do a thing.
Snow symbol?
They have, like, a little, like a snowflake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could use
no
it
idea
to
how
pay.
This is like.
There was, like, an alt. It was like a mana cost requirement.
Yeah. So many questions.
I mean, it really is like snow mana.
I mean, and if that's the case, will it show up and will it be your land for the pack? And then you'll draft this instead of your land?
I was telling you at work today, Cole, if this is just like a new color, basically, these wastes lands are just a middle finger to land caddies at game stores around the world.
Right. I mean,
everyone knows there's only 5 slots in those land caddies.
Do they have to...
they're going to have like one sitting off to the side.
This is all just a ploy to make LGSs buy more new land caddies.
Right.
Wizards of the Coast is trying to ruin the LGSs.
Hashtag conspiracy land caddy.
Hashtag wastegate.
You see all the other people are writing on there. They're like, oh my God, the world is ending. They've created purple.
Cause right.
Like in the long ways back, like when we guys played, like,
yeah.
You know, it's like they always wanted to, people are like, we should make another color and it should be like purple and do this or whatever. That's basically what it is, right?
I mean, maybe. I mean, it might be just another take on colorless and then this is
It is. It's just a specific colorless type.
So are they going to. Here's my...
I think we can all agree this raises more questions than it answers.
Yes, it does. And we'll be talking about this for coming weeks. And as Wizards releases more information, I'm sure we'll have more...
It's bismuth.
Interesting speculation.
If you go look online, go check... I went down a whole YouTube hole of like looking at how to make bismuth ingots on YouTube, and I suggest it. It's pretty cool.
Okay.
Bismuth is an element.
Nice. I mean...
It forms crystal structures that are sort of like square-looking, like the...
Like this art?
Yeah, like the sort of the square shapes on this art. It's cool. It's cool shit. You could... It melts at like 550 degrees Fahrenheit. You can like melt it on your stove. It's pretty cool.
And then what? You like cool it down and...
Yeah, you make cool crystals, Cole, and then you like... Give them to your hippie friends and tell them it's going to, like, feng shui their bullshit.
And then you also, like, sometimes die because bismuth is really, like, toxic.
Oh, really?
I mean, yeah. You're not fucking eating it, Larry.
Yeah, but if you're melting it, there are vapors.
Well, you're not... I don't wear a mask.
All right, that's that's where we go with this conversation. I'm sure if you want more specifics, there are other podcasts for you. But honestly, I don't know what to say. Cool.
I'm going to have to wait.
I'm excited. Yeah, are you excited?
I mean, I'm always optimistic.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. I have to hear more before I can start like having problems and or
yeah, I'm actually,
sweats of excitement.
I am actually really pissed when I see people like freaking out of this. I'm like, dude, you only have so much design space, right?
Right.
If you want something fucking new and interesting, you have to take chances, right?
Right. My worry is that Wizards is in a... They're putting themselves in a bind with this design mechanic where they either make the cards that require this mana super powerful to compensate for the limited availability, like what they perceive as the limited availability of the mana.
You mean like this broken Kozilek
thing? Like the broken Kozilek thing. But I'm like thinking that like print a Siege Rhino, right, for colorless and blah, blah, blah. Which then turns the entire metagame around the colorless like the diamond waste mana. Or they're scared of that and they don't print very powerful payoff cards for the waste mana. And then everybody's like, well, you did. It was totally useless and didn't affect the format. And you should stop printing sets because if you can't make new standard cards, I don't buy your product anymore.
That actually came up in... when we were working on Cold Snap.
Oh, yeah?
And there were many, many, many of us that... Of course, you know, again, the design of cards then was still kind of iffy. Like, right. You know, but the feeling was that Cold Snap should have been far more powerful things
right.
that you do with snow-covered lands and things against snow-covered lands. Like, it should have been a much more... Kind of like how, like, you know, Morphin, like Cons was. And
right.
How, like, it should have felt like...
Premier,
an integral thing that like you know this creature gets +1/+1 for each different snow covered land.
Type. Right,
you have
right,
stuff
right.
like that. That like every single card is like a powerhouse when you introduce the
and you
the
commit
snow.
To the and,
yes,
you know
you have to commit to it exactly.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's interesting to see, and it'll be interesting to see how they walk that line because I feel like it is super cool. I love the flavor of the snow-covered lands. I loved it back in Ice Age when it was really originally printed. It was like really kind of cool idea. And I love that they're messing with mana. You know, they messed with kind of colors of cards in this set and the Exile Zone. And they're really pushing like the pedal to the metal with the design, with what they can do with Eldrazi. Because Eldrazi exists kind of outside the Magic universe, you can do things outside of what you think about of the game. So we'll see.
Even to like what Evan said that I like is that they look alien.
Yeah.
Like they even pushed that aspect, which I like.
Right. They look a lot more science fiction-y than they do, you know, magic fantasy.
Yeah. My one concern right now is what this will do to a format like Sealed. Because I'm sure you've all had Sealed pools where it's just hard to come up with 40 play or, you know, 22 playables. in two colors, and if we have a sixth color, it's just going to make it harder and harder to come up with that many playables. I don't think it'll be as much of a problem in draft, because draft is supposedly self-correcting.
Yeah, go home and draft green, kids.
Yeah, hopefully people will find their lanes and things will work out fine, but sealed it could be a problem.
Yeah.
You know, I see people maybe having to play more like three-color decks, depending on how many packs of Oath of the Gatewatcher are in.
Should be 2-1, right? Sealed.
Sorry, what?
Should be two.
The draft will be 2-1.
Yeah.
2-Oath, 1. But sealed might be...
So it'd be like...
3-3 should be draft.
Not 4-2?
It might be 4-2, which they did with Fate Reforged and cons.
10-30.
But they did four of the new set as opposed to two of the...
1,000.
Anyway, who knows?
263.
I think we've hit our math...
Peak podcast.
And if you have opinions about the waste cards and things like that, you can email us. Evan, how can they email us?
We have an email address, and you can send emails there.
Great. Good luck.
Tell us how that works out for you.
Good luck. Log into AOL.
Wait for it to dial up and connect to the internet.
Yeah. Make sure your mom's not on the phone already. But our email address is... wizardsofthecast@gmail.com.
Yes.
If you want to hit us up on the tweets, I'm at NobodyRLY.
I am at KColeF.
At ChatFiend.
Those are our stuffs.
We have a Facebook page, too.
We have a Facebook page.
We post things. I posted the blurry picture of my 3-0 black-white life gain deck, if you want to check it out.
So I do have a question before we leave. So why did you have 3 Evolving Wilds in that deck?
I had 2 Blighted Step, 1 Evolving Wild.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay, never mind.
You should have passed one of those Evolving Wilds to me. I really could have used it.
You know, it was like 9th pick in one of the later packs, and I was like, you know what? There's nothing in this pack. I like Evolving Wilds. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Anyways. And I think those are all the things.
Yes.
So for Wizards of the Cast, my name is Evan Wardell.
I'm Larry Chatfield.
And I'm Cole Ferriola.
Thank you for listening.